Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, February 17, 2016. The United Nations mission in South Sudan says civilians are trapped as fighting between South Sudan Army and local vigilante groups continue in Western Equatorial State.
Part of the gravity of the situation today in terms of food insecurity is because we do not have access. WFP, the food agency, is trying as we are in the dry season.
And the former U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan says the U.S. is working with IGAD and other partners to speed up the implementation of the peace deal.
What we saw in South Sudan was the weakness of civil institutions, weakness of the political party, unable to deal with and resolve the rivalry between President Kiir and his vice president, the weakness of the parliament.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Residents of Bari village in Bangalore Payam of Mundri West are accusing government troops of burning houses and looting property in the newly created Amadi state. The South Sudan Army commander of Division 6 in Maridi declined to comment, saying he has no idea of what is taking place in Bari. Gift Friday reports for VOA from Juba.
Heavy fighting between the SPLA and local armed groups known as Nyarango began on Friday afternoon in Bari Boma, in the southern part of Mundri West County of Amadi State, and continues today. The local vigilante group claims to be part of the SPLA IO forces loyal to South Sudan's newly appointed first vice president, Riek Machar. John Sebit is a resident of Bari village. He says women, children and elderly people fled to the bush last week because of heavy fighting between the South Sudan Army and the local vigilante group. Speaking in Arabic, Sebit says the conditions of people in the bush is very serious. Sebit says civilians are all in the bush. Children are all in the bush where there is malaria, mosquitoes and coldness, but no food. Another resident who identifies himself only as Iyawa says the South Sudan Army has destroyed the area. Speaking in Arabic, Iyawa says some errant members of the SPLA Army went on rampart in Bari village. Iyawa says they burn people's houses, take people's property, kill children, take goats, and adds when they force their way into a house, they will take anything that looks good to them. He says the international community and aid agencies have abandoned the people of Amadi state. Iyawa says they also deceive people in the area by saying relief is coming, but it is actually the army coming. He asks if the relief of South Sudan now to be brought by the army. He adds, better let the civilians die without relief, because they gather you in one place waiting for relief and then kill you with their guns. The spokesperson for the United Nations mission in South Sudan, UNMISS, Ariane Conter, acknowledged that the humanitarian situation in Western Equatoria is grim. Conter says UNMISS is calling on the warring parties to allow aid agencies to reach residents trapped in the fighting.
Western Equatoria has been, to put it mildly, a tense and volatile area for now a few months. It's been Yambio, it's been Mundri. We have a temporary operating base in Mundri, from which we try to patrol the area. But as we know, and there is nothing new here, we have a major issue of access. And what is reported to us is that thousands of people would be in the bush needing help, needing assistance, and not being in security and not enjoying any safety. We have issues of access from most parties.
The administrator of Bangalore Payam, Lekson Balas Edward, says his people are scattered in remote parts of the Payam. He says authorities in the newly created Amadi state are silent about the ongoing fighting. South Sudan in Focus contacted the governor of Amadi state by phone from Washington, but he declined to comment, aside from saying he has no knowledge of what is happening in his state. He speaks in Arabic. Balas accuses the South Sudan army of killing the chief of his Payam earlier this week. Lexon says, when they see you as a man, they will just kill you. He says they have now reached Bangalore, where they killed the chief of Bangalore. Lexon says the people of Bangalore have not yet returned, whether they are in Garia or Ledema. He says they still don't know. South Sudan in Focus reached a senior member of the South Sudan Army in Maridi, but he refused to comment. After making several phone calls to Major General Valentino Tokmak, he denied having any knowledge of renewed fighting in Baribuma in Amadi State. This is all he had to say.
Sorry, I have no idea.
The army's spokesperson says aid agencies are facing major challenges accessing people affected by the crisis in that area of Amadi.
It's been a problem for our humanitarian colleagues, for the international funds programming agencies, as well as the international NGOs. And part of the gravity of the situation today, in terms of food insecurity, is because we do not have access. WFP, the food agency, is trying, as we are in the dry season, to position as much food as possible in advance of the rainy season, when roads will not be passable, and the access is not only going to be a problem of authorization, but it's also going to be a problem of climate and rain. I mean, WFP is having a terrible hard time to do that.
She says ANMIS is engaging with local authorities, community leaders, and the military to defuse the situation and open access to humanitarian aid to reach the people hiding in the bush. For VOA, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
Waki Simon Wudu contributed to this report from Juba. While fighting continues in Amadi State, other parts of the country, diplomats and senior officials describe what's needed to achieve peace in South Sudan. Ambassador Princeton Lyman, former U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, says the United States is working with IGAD and regional partners to move implementation of South Sudan's peace agreement forward. He tells VOA's Ayen Bior that last week's appointment of former rebel leader Riek Machar to the position of the first vice president was a critical milestone and a necessary step in the long road to peace and stability in South Sudan.
Well, it is a step that is required as part of the peace plan, and it formalizes one of the important steps in the peace agreement. The question now is, will Riek Machar find it secure enough and safe enough to come to Juba and begin the work of this transitional or unity government?
On that point, Machar has asked for some 1,400 forces as a prerequisite to his highly anticipated arrival to Juba. What is the role of the United States in the transport of those forces? Could you comment on the progress of this part of the agreement?
I know that the U.S. government, the Special Envoy's office, has been working very hard to help the IGAD work out the details and the arrangements for it, but I'm not familiar with any material support that we might be giving.
Now, another issue standing in the way of the establishment of the transitional government is the constitution, or the lack thereof.
Right.
As you know, both sides have decided to establish a transitional government without a constitution. What are the implications of moving forward without a constitution? What do you see as the short-term gains, as well as the long-term consequences, if there are any?
Well, it would have been very difficult for them to agree on a constitution that would guide the transitional government. It would have been a nice thing to have done, but I can't imagine they would have been able to do it. What South Sudan needs, of course, is a new permanent constitution that addresses some of the fundamental weaknesses that existed in the institutions of government that led to the civil war. But that process should involve much more than the leaders of this transitional government. It should be a much more broad-based process, and probably will take some time.
Just last week, three UN agencies began to sound the alarm of what they described as a worsening humanitarian crisis. I'm sure you're aware, but 40,000 South Sudanese are experiencing catastrophic levels of hunger, while 2.8 million will face acute malnutrition, according to the United Nations. With figures like that, it's easy to conclude that innocent civilians have borne the brunt of this conflict. one of the solutions that the international community has brought up a few times is the option of an arms embargo. Is that something that you think would work in a country like South Sudan?
An arms embargo will only work if the surrounding countries support it and will enforce it, because that's where the arms come through, if not directly financed there. So an arms embargo would work if those countries would agree to it. I don't think they've yet agreed to it. I don't think they've agreed to try and enforce it. So in the meanwhile, you have to hope that the ceasefire will hold and that that will allow for humanitarian access to the many people who have been displaced and who are in danger of famine.
Now, what are some of the key lessons that we have learned from South Sudan's recent conflict?
One is never idolize a rebellion and assume that the people who are fighting against an injustice will not commit injustices of their own. Second, I think that what we saw in South Sudan was the weakness of civil institutions, weakness of the political party, unable to deal with and resolve the rivalry between President Kiir and his vice president, the weakness of the parliament in being able to stand up to the usurpation of power by the president, and the failure of the army to integrate the various militias, which split apart almost immediately and between them have committed some horrific human rights violations.
That's former U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Ambassador Princeton Lyman, speaking to Ayane Bure here in Washington. Ambassador Lyman is a senior advisor at the U.S. Institute of Peace, based in Washington. Members of civil society groups are asking government and SPLM in opposition to silence the guns and respect the permanent ceasefire signed by both President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar. As Philip Thornaleu reports for VOA from Juba, activists told the SPLM IO lead negotiator that patience among South Sudanese is wearing out.
Akwoch Ajang, chairperson of the Civil Society Alliance, says the long overdue formation of the transitional government of national unity is holding progress on implementing the August peace deal. Ajang says South Sudanese must speak up about the suffering of the people because of the continued fighting in some parts of the country.
The gun are not silenced in some places within the country, which is very unfortunate. There's no point that a citizen can die at this time while the agreement has been already signed. There's no solution that can be reached through guns. It has been more than 2 years already, and the government and IO have been fighting each other. Having reached any solution by guns, of course, no.
The Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMEC, is the body tasked with monitoring the implementation process of the peace deal. Ajang says South Sudanese must remind President Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar about the dire humanitarian conditions in the Recep Amadi State, one of the new states created by President Kiir, along with other parts of the country where government troops and the SPLA in opposition forces are still fighting. SPLM IO lead negotiator Taban Dengai says his group is preparing for Machar's arrival in Juba. Guy did not specify any fixed dates, but insists his group is making arrangements for transporting Machar's bodyguard and forces to Juba.
We have suggested that half of the 2,910 should come from Pagak, from Malakal, and Targias in Unity State to Juba by air, so that they come sooner, quicker, for the first vice president to come. We are being faced with the issue of logistics, because it's not simple to hire a plane from Juba to go to Pagak to bring forces.
Guy says the tracker countries, the United States, Norway, and Britain, have pledged to provide funds to help transport Machar forces. He says once they are in Juba, the transitional government of national unity will be formed.
It is very important that new element of police come to Juba, because this is a confident building. You have listened to Akwoi talking about the IDPs coming out of protection site. How will they come out? They have to come out if they're secure, if they know that they are fully secure. They are confident of the security arrangement put in place. Because coming out is not order. You cannot order a person to come out by order that I ordered today that you return to your house. Even me, I told him when we were meeting, I have not returned to my house.
President Salva Kiir appointed Machar first vice president last week and asked him to report to Juba on Friday of this week. Machar told South Sudan in Focus last week that he cannot come to the capital without his bodyguards. Members of the Civic Society Alliance are calling on the international community to continue putting pressure on the government and the SPLM in position to implement the peace agreement immediately. For VOA News, I am Pilithona Leo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, little was done to protect elephants during South Sudan's two-year-long conflict. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the greatest lesson you have learned from a relationship or marriage?
The greatest lesson I've learned is to accept others based on who they are and not based on what you want them to be.
Human beings are not perfect. They can hurt you sometimes, but then you also need to forgive.
I've learned not to give too much and not to trust at all. Because I gave too much, I gave myself fully and I never reaped anything out of it.
It's that of trust. It's that of trust, because without trust, there is no way you can thrive on with a relationship.
In marriage, I have learned one thing: to be patient.
I cannot trust a woman 100%. You know, that is relationship. And I think I cannot cheat on my woman because she is my woman. So that is my experience.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Committee for National Healing, Peace and Reconciliation is preparing to hand over its work to the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing, a body formed in accordance with the August Peace Agreement. Church leaders and civil society activists say the best way to achieve peace in the country is to involve members of various South Sudanese communities in peace-building activities. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from the capital, Juba.
The Right Reverend Daniel Dengbol is the Archbishop of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan and Sudan. He also heads the Committee for National Healing, Peace and Reconciliation. The Right Reverend Deng says South Sudanese should be engaged in the search for peaceful coexistence among different communities in the country.
Our people have never been asked, what do they want? Yes, we have a country, but did you ask them, what type of country do we have? Is this country a country that we have to fight one another? Or is it a country to see that our country live in peace, our children live in peace, good education, good health, and development? So those people need to be asked, what is your priorities? They should not be given their priorities. They have to be asked, what do they need in their villages?
The committee was established in 2013 to initiate reconciliation and healing across South Sudan after the country gained independence in 2011. The head of the Anglican Church says he is preparing to hand over his duties to the Commission of Truth, Reconciliation and Healing. Reverend Deng says the solution to the country's instability is in the hands of its citizens.
Our recommendation is that not to ignore the process, the local people. They have their own process. They have their own way of solving the issues. We don't need to ignore them. We have to bring them alongside with us, and they will support us to support the country in developing. They have ideas.
Under the terms of the peace agreement, the transitional government of national unity will establish a commission of truth, reconciliation and healing to start the process of peace building across the country. Sarah James Ajith works for the non-profit organization Support for Women in Governance. She says rural South Sudanese should be included in the search for peace.
This crisis has created mistrust, hatred and suspicion among our community. And if we are going to start the issue of reconciliation from the bottom up to up, I think we will succeed and we will have a lasting peace in South Sudan.
Agelring Machar is a member of the SPLM-IO advance team in Juba. He says it is important to consult South Sudanese on how to build trust and confidence after 2 years of fighting.
We thought there had been this process to make sure Chapter 5 is part of the agreement, to make sure that truth and reconciliation takes place in the country, because it's the only way we can unite our people reconcile them towards a unified country as we move forward.
Taban Keystone Santo works with the South Sudan Law Society. He says the process of consulting members of the community worked in several other countries, including Rwanda, South Africa, East Timor, Peru, and Cambodia. He says these countries are now relatively stable after a vigorous, inclusive peace-building process. Santo says South Sudan's Commission of Truth, Reconciliation and Healing should also start a similar inclusive process, including all those affected by the conflict.
They should be able to foster on bringing communities together. People have to speak out, talk the truth, because Desmond Tutu once said, the truth shall save you free or will make you free. The truth-telling is one of the fundamental principles in international law. In order to foster reconciliation, at least the perpetrators, those who are suffered the harm, should come out clearly and also say, yeah, we have done this, forgive us.
Churches in South Sudan have a long track record of reconciling different communities during conflict. In 1998, the New Sudan Council of Churches started the Wounded Peace and Reconciliation Conference, which ended deadly conflict between two warring communities in Upper Nile and Bahr el Ghazal areas. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Sudan's Ministry of Education, with support of UNICEF, has launched what it calls Back to Learning 2 campaign, which targets more than 500,000 children across South Sudan. Officials say the program will benefit hundreds of thousands of children deprived of receiving an education during the 2 years of fighting in the country. Mungume Debs Rokarinj files this report for VOA from Juba.
Speaking at today's launch, South Sudan's Minister of Education, John Gayo, says his government will concentrate on development programs like education.
We now begin to concentrate on those children and mothers who are affected by war and those of them who are coming back. We must renovate their schools and construct new schools.
According to UNICEF, more than 1.8 million children and adolescents across the country have dropped out of school for various reasons, including the conflict. Philip Laku Daniel teaches agriculture at Nile Model Secondary School. He welcomes the initiative but says the government should do more to improve the country's education sector. He says his school, like many other learning institutions in the country, lacks a laboratory and teaching materials.
Learning also cannot go without textbook, because if a student cannot understand the teacher, he or she may just go to the library and open the same book and maybe she will pick from there.
Paulino Martin is a student at the Nile Model Secondary School. He says having no library at his school affects his studies.
It is a long struggling. By the I must have students, you can struggle hard and read what you have given by teacher. Teacher is no 100%, but you try 75% by yourself.
Tizi Mafalala is the education manager at UNICEF South Sudan. She says South Sudan has a long way to go in terms of providing students a quality education.
There are a number of issues. One issue is distance to school. So if a school is far away, children, and especially girls, will not be able to walk the long distance to school. Many schools in South Sudan, about half the schools in South Sudan, are under temporary structures or trees. So they are not exactly inviting the children, and less than around two-thirds of them actually have water and sanitation. So that makes it difficult for a child to remain in school the whole day.
She says the Back to Learning campaign has helped around 400,000 children return to classroom last year. She says the organization needs at least $75 million to fund this initiative. The funds will be used to build schools and buy learning materials for children in areas affected by the conflict. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Juba.
Waki Simon, would you contribute to this report from Juba? The South Sudan Ministry of Interior Wildlife Conservation says hundreds of elephants have been killed during the 2 years of fighting between government and rebel forces. As Nabil Biagio reports from Juba, the government is seeking help from neighboring countries to protect elephants in South Sudan.
General Philip Joel Majak is Director General of the South Sudan National Wildlife Service. He attended a two-day conference in Nairobi, Kenya last week to discuss the battle against illegal trade of animals and plants in East Africa. Majak says authorities from various organizations must collect illegal firearms from South Sudanese citizens in order to prevent more elephant poaching across the country.
We come with very big resolutions, a lot of resolutions. How to implement them, this need organizations also to help us. So we hope if we achieve peace in the Republic of South Sudan, and then these scattered firearms in the hands of people have to be collected back to their stores, automatically everything will be stable.
The conference brought together participants from South Sudan, Ethiopia, Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda, and Rwanda. Majak says East African countries like South Sudan have to learn from the mistakes of other African countries that failed to protect its wildlife.
The most of the elephants were finished in Western Africa, like in Sierra Leone, like in Guinea, Bacha. There were elephants there. But through poaching, this is where the elephants finish. They kill all these elephants. So the most of the elephants just remain now in East Africa, and maybe few in South Africa and Zimbabwe.
Before the start of Sudan's second civil war in 1983, there were an estimated 133,000 elephants in South Sudan. Today, Majak says, only a few thousands are left. Lieutenant General Alfred Akuj Omoli, an advisor at the Ministry of Interior and Wildlife Conservation, says the two-year conflict drove away wildlife in parts of Jonglei State.
In South Sudan, of course, we have got so many elephants. But the last 3 or 4 years ago, the number has reduced terribly, see, in the parks and game posts. So we are trying now to protect them, because ivory is taken from the dead animal. But we have to stop killing so that there is nothing to be trafficked.
Omoli says participants at the meeting have agreed to share their intelligence on poachers. Michael Lopidia, Deputy Director at the Wildlife Conservation Society in South Sudan, says his office is intensifying efforts to fight poaching and trafficking of elephants in the country by training officers on how to identify and track potential poachers.
We have sponsored training of wildlife rangers chosen from Eastern Equatoria, Central Equatoria, the headquarters, then from Jongole and Boma, and also from Western Equatoria. These are for intelligence gathering on wildlife poaching and trafficking.
Lopidia says his organization is also working with the government on creating a special unit to help fight poaching in South Sudan.
WCS together with the ministry have agreed to introduce a sniffer dog unit. There are two dogs that are currently being trained by WCS by some experts. It will be a 6-week training with some rangers selected by interview from the wildlife forces. These dogs, once they are trained, they will be deployed in strategic areas like Juba Airport, where there is trafficking. They can also be deployed at some strategic exit and entrances across borders and in subject points within the country.
Elephants live in parks and game reserves in former Upper Nile State, Numuli, Boma, and other areas across the country, including rebel-held towns like Pagak. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We thank you for listening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanzer.